Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Radical Markets, Uprooting Capitalism and Democracy for a Just Society by Eric A. Posner presents a bold set of proposals aimed at fixing deep dysfunctions in modern capitalism and democratic governance. Rather than calling for more regulation within familiar frameworks, the book argues that many of today's problems come from the way property rights, monopoly power, and political participation are structured. Posner explores how concentrated ownership can trap wealth, suppress competition, and amplify inequality, while political systems often fail to represent citizens fairly or deliver collective goods efficiently. The book's defining feature is its willingness to treat markets not as untouchable institutions, but as tools that can be redesigned. It introduces unconventional mechanisms intended to increase competition, broaden access to opportunity, and reduce the ability of entrenched interests to block change. Whether readers agree or disagree, the book functions as a provocative blueprint for reimagining ownership, antitrust, taxation, and voting in ways meant to better align private incentives with social justice and democratic legitimacy. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, rethinking property through continuous reallocation, a central theme is that traditional property rights can create stagnation and unfairness when ownership becomes too secure and too concentrated. The book explores the idea that many valuable assets, from urban land to corporate holdings, are kept underused because owners can sit on them indefinitely, capturing rising value while communities bear the cost of scarcity. Instead of treating property as absolute, the authors propose mechanisms that keep ownership more contestable so assets flow to higher valued uses. The best-known proposal associated with the book is a self-assessed ownership and tax scheme for certain assets designed to discourage hoarding and encourage productive deployment. Conceptually, the owner declares a price and pays a tax based on that valuation, while remaining open to selling at that posted price. Supporters argue this could reduce land speculation, lower barriers for new entrants, and improve allocative efficiency. Critics worry about implementation complexity, displacement risks, and political feasibility. The topic invites readers to question whether the moral and economic promises of private property are actually met under current rules, and whether alternative designs could protect personal security while preventing asset lock-in and artificial scarcity. Secondly, confronting monopoly and market power with new tools, the book frames monopoly power as a defining challenge of contemporary capitalism, affecting prices, wages, innovation, and even politics. It suggests that standard antitrust approaches may be too slow, too narrow, or too focused on consumer prices to address modern forms of dominance, such as platform effects, data advantages, and vertical control. The broader argument is that concentrated market power can become self-reinforcing, allowing large firms and wealthy actors to shape rules, buy influence, and deter competitors. Against that backdrop, the book highlights more aggressive and structurally oriented approaches that aim to keep markets genuinely contestable. It encourages readers to think beyond case-by-case enforcement and consider systematic reforms that change incentives, reduce barriers to entry, and limit the ability of incumbents to entrench themselves. The discussion also connects monopoly to inequality. When bargaining power is skewed, workers and small suppliers may receive less of the value they help create. By linking competition policy to democratic health, the book argues that breaking or preventing excessive concentration is not only an economic goal, but also a civic one. The topic challenges readers to see antitrust as an institutional design problem rather than a narrow legal doctrine. Thirdly, sharing national wealth. Through universal equity, another major idea is that inequality is not only about income, but also about ownership and claims on future growth. The book examines how wealth, particularly in the form of diversified equity, can provide security and opportunity that wages alone rarely deliver. Because capital ownership is concentrated, gains from productivity and globalization tend to accrue to a relatively small group, leaving many people exposed to shocks and with limited participation in economic upside. The authors explore proposals for broad-based wealth sharing that operate through markets rather than replacing them. One prominent concept associated with the book is a universal form of capital ownership or social wealth fund logic, where citizens hold a stake in the economy and receive dividends tied to national prosperity. The intention is to reduce the political and social strain created by extreme inequality without relying exclusively on traditional redistribution after the fact. The topic also addresses practical questions: how such a system would be funded, how it would be governed to avoid capture, and how it would interact with private investment incentives. Readers are pushed to consider whether a fair society requires not just safety nets but also a genuine ownership stake for everyone, making capitalism less extractive and more inclusive. Fourthly, reforming democracy with new voting and representation models. The book argues that democratic failure is often structural rather than merely cultural. It suggests that current electoral systems can underrepresent minority viewpoints, encourage polarization, and create incentives for politicians to cater to donors or organized interests instead of broad public welfare. Against this backdrop, it explores alternative voting and representation mechanisms intended to better translate citizen preferences into policy. Proposals associated with the book include more flexible methods of expressing voter intensity, potentially allowing people to allocate political influence across issues or elections in ways that reflect what they care about most. The goal is not to weaken democracy, but to make it more responsive and less dominated by narrow factions. The topic also invites reflection on how institutions shape behavior. When political outcomes depend on winner-take-all competition, parties may focus on mobilizing bases rather than solving shared problems. Alternative systems aim to reduce wasted votes, encourage coalition building, and make governance less brittle. Skeptics may question whether such mechanisms are too complex for broad participation or could introduce new forms of manipulation. Still, the discussion pushes readers to view democracy as a design space, where rules about voting, districting, and participation can be re-engineered to improve legitimacy and policy performance. Lastly, from incremental fixes to institutional redesign, a unifying message of the book is that many debates about capitalism and justice are trapped between defending the status quo and proposing wholesale replacement. Instead, it advocates institutional redesign, keeping the coordinating strengths of markets and democratic governance while changing the rules that produce concentrated power and unfair outcomes. This theme ties together proposals on property, monopoly, wealth, and voting by emphasizing that the problems are not accidents but predictable results of incentive structures. The book urges readers to ask what objectives institutions should serve, and then to engineer mechanisms that align private action with public goals. It also highlights trade-offs, efficiency versus stability, innovation versus fairness, simplicity versus precision, and local autonomy versus national standards. Importantly, the book treats feasibility as a question of political strategy and experimentation, not merely a technical constraint. Readers are encouraged to consider pilot programs, gradual rollouts, and hybrid models that can test reforms and build legitimacy over time. This topic makes the book valuable even for those who disagree with specific proposals, because it offers a framework for thinking creatively about economic and political institutions. It reframes reform as a form of social technology where better rules can expand freedom and opportunity. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers who want big ideas about how to repair capitalism and democracy without defaulting to either laissez-faire defenses or fully centralized alternatives. Policy professionals, economists, legal scholars, activists, entrepreneurs, and curious general readers will find a clear invitation to rethink assumptions about ownership, competition, and political participation. Its benefit comes from expanding the reader's toolkit. Even if you reject particular proposals, you will likely come away with sharper questions about why inequality persists, why monopolies endure, and why democratic systems struggle to represent public preferences. The book can change how you evaluate everyday debates about housing, antitrust, taxation, and electoral reform by focusing on incentives and institutional design rather than slogans. Compared to similar books that diagnose problems and stop at moral appeals, this one stands out for offering concrete mechanisms that can be debated, modeled, and tested. It treats markets and democracy as editable systems, not sacred objects, which makes the discussion unusually practical for a work with such ambitious aims. If you want a provocative, structured set of reform options that connect economic fairness to democratic legitimacy, it is worth buying as a starting point for serious argument and policy imagination. If you would like to support Eric A. Posner, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.